Hey everybody, it's Matt. Welcome or welcome back to the Journey Church podcast. If you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to this podcast so you can automatically get our weekly episodes. And you might want to go ahead and subscribe to our Journey YouTube channel as well. You'll find messages, music, interviews, inspiring stories, and more for you all right there. Now, I hope this episode helps you take your next step in following Jesus. Today, what I want to do to start out is I want to start with a question. I'm actually going to circle back to a question that I asked you at the start of the series, and you have forgotten because you have lived since then, right? So I want to circle back to it because it's a really powerful question. The question is simply this: what is the primary emotion that competes for control of your life? Because we all have one. Now, you got a lot of emotions that compete for control, but you have a primary one. You have one that maybe you're wired to gravitate towards more often than not. What is the primary emotion for you? What is the thing that it drives what you say, what you don't say? It drives how you say it, how strongly or firmly or loudly you say it. It drives who you say things to and who you don't say things to. What would be your primary emotion? You may not be aware, but I promise you the people who know you best are aware. If you turn to them right now, they could probably tell you. All of us have a primary emotion. And I told you a few weeks ago, I might tell you mine if I was brave enough, so I'm going to tell you mine because it's just us, and I'm sure you'll never share this with anybody. So since it's just in here, I'll tell you my primary emotion that, if I'm not careful, tends to drive me over and over is anger. I don't know if I almost said, hey, if you're like me, raise your hand. I thought nobody's going to do that. So it's anger. But in my defense, anger can be a bad thing, obviously, but can also be a good thing. We'll come back to that in just a minute. But anger is a negative thing, or it's a harmful thing when it starts to creep in or seep into relationships. When it's expressed, from me to somebody else, it's never a positive. That's always a negative thing. And the thing that's so odd about anger, and those of you who this is yours, maybe you can relate to this. The thing that's so odd about anger is none of us with anger like to admit that we're angry. When my wife looks at me and says, what's wrong with you? I never look back and say, I'm just angry. That's not my answer, ever. I always look back and very loudly say, I'm just frustrated. To which she goes, oh, so I'll take note. Matt's just frustrated, really loud. It's so obvious I'm angry, but nobody likes to say they're angry. They just want to say they're frustrated. But is there really a difference between being angry and being frustrated? I'll let you figure that out for yourself. We are in week 3 of this series, You're Not the Boss of Me, and the tagline is so important. It's how to say no to the emotions that compete for control. Because all of us have emotions, whether it's anger for you, or guilt, or greed, or jealousy, or envy, or fear, or insecurity, we could go on and on. All of us have some emotion that's trying to gain control of your life, that's trying to grab the steering wheel of your life, that's trying to drive who you are and what you do and how you relate to people. But the thing is, that emotion, whatever that primary emotion is, you're probably born to be wired to lean that way, which is why you don't even think it's unnatural. You don't even notice it. You don't even see it as a problem because it's always been there for you. But it's devastating, it's damaging, and it tends to shape our lives in some ways to be people we don't actually want to be if we don't address it. So we have to learn how to say no to the emotions that compete for control of our lives. Because according to Jesus, what's in us will come out of us no matter what's going on around us. It's eventually going to come out. And those things that are in us that come out of us put us at odds with the people around us, which then puts us at odds with God. So it's worth dealing with. If we let those emotions take control, things quickly begin to get out of control. But again, we often don't even recognize it's a problem. So Jesus, when he was teaching, said, hey, you've got to move beyond monitoring your behavior, because that's what all of us do. We figure that out pretty early in life. You got to move past monitoring your behavior. You got to learn to monitor your heart. You got to learn to monitor the stuff that's actually going on inside of you. You got to be aware of what those things are rattling around in your heart. And you got to know how to deal with them. And nobody taught us how to do that growing up, did they? It's just like, hey, you should behave and don't do this and do this. But nobody taught us to dig down deep to see why we were feeling what we were feeling or why we were acting the way we were acting. So over the last few weeks, we've started to talk through some of these emotions. Last week, two weeks ago, Jared talked about guilt, which was so helpful. Today, we're going to talk about anger. And we're going to try to answer this question. How do you keep anger from being the boss of you? How do you keep it from being the boss of you? Now, when we talk about anger, a couple things. First of all, There is such a thing as good anger. That's not what we're talking about today. Let me tell you what good anger is. Good anger is when you get angry because somebody else isn't getting what they deserve. Good anger is when you get angry over an injustice in the world. Oh, that's good anger. I mean, you should feel that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. As a matter of fact, some of the things that we cherish the most, some of the best things that have happened to us over the years, some of the best advancements, some of the greatest change or impact in the world has all come because of good anger. Good anger was behind our national freedom. It's why we're a country today. Good anger was behind the civil rights movement. Good anger is why there are organizations like Compassion International that step in and help children in poverty. It's why there are organizations like Charity Water who go, no, we're not going to let 10% of the world's population not have access to clean water. We're going to solve that problem. All of that's good anger. That's not what we're talking about today. What we're talking about today is the anger that you and I are more familiar with. We think about more often. But what we tend to do is stereotype this and say, oh, it's that extroverted kind of anger. So when we talk about anger, you immediately think of the person who, loses their temper. They start cursing. They're throwing things. They're just railing and carrying on. You think about that extrovert kind of anger, which obviously is one example of it. But there's a flip side to that. There's also an introverted kind of anger, which is also just as damaging to relationships. The introverted anger, and this is some of you, it's the ones who you don't express anything outwardly. It's just all internal. But your silence is deafening. Your silence is damaging. Your moodiness is destroying. Everybody knows you're angry, but you just don't express it. You don't let it out. So it doesn't really matter whether you just blow up or you shut up when it comes to getting angry. Both versions of that anger are a problem. They're a problem. So how do you keep that from being the boss of you? How do you keep that from driving what you say and what you don't say? Because you know that'll get you in trouble. How do you keep that from defining how you say something to somebody and who you say something to and who you don't say something to? Well, I want to take you to some advice that James, the brother of Jesus, wrote about this very issue. Can you imagine growing up with Jesus? And you had your anger issues, and then there was your perfect brother over there. So that had to be a little challenging for James, but he learned some stuff growing up at the same time. And James had a very unique perspective on how to keep anger from being the boss of us. And I want to unpack this for you for the next few minutes and look at this together. So as he's writing to a group of Christians in the first century, he starts by asking them, and by extension, asking all of us a question. He says, well, who is wise and understanding among you? So he doesn't even start with anger. He starts with wisdom. You know what wisdom is? Wisdom is simply seeing life from God's point of view. Or to say it another way, wisdom is the ability to see that all of life is connected. So you know a person is wise. Those are the people who realize that the decisions they're making today are going to have an impact down the road. And so they're not just looking at today, right? They have the ability to step back and see how everything's connected. If I do this, this is what's going to happen down the road. If I do this, this is what's going to happen. Those are wise people. And so James says, let's just start by asking the question, which ones of you have the ability to do that, to step back and to see life from a broader perspective? Which ones of you are wise and understanding, to which all of us want to raise our hands, right? And James says, whoa, before you raise your hand, let me actually give you a metric you can use to measure. He says, because if you're wise, there's an obvious tell that you are wise. He says, let them, the wise people, let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Now, this is really important because James connects wisdom with humility. In other words, he says, if you want to know if you're wise or not, look and see how much humility you demonstrate and model in your life, because wisdom and humility are connected. Wisdom and pride, it's impossible for those two things to be connected. And the reason's simple. People who are proud and people who are arrogant, you get this, they do not have a proper perspective on the world. People who are proud and arrogant believe they are the center of the world. They don't see the world accurately. They don't see the world clearly. And because of that, if you don't have a proper perspective and you think the whole world revolves around you, then there's no way for you to have wisdom. There's no way for you to practice wisdom. So James says, okay, what you have to understand, first of all, is wise people are humble people. You have to have enough humility, not to think less of yourself, just enough humility to think of yourself less. You have to have enough humility to be able to see the world and know you are not the center of it, and that you're going to put others before you, others before you, others before you, because that's what humility does. But the flip side, James says, is this. He says, but if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition, pride, arrogance in your hearts, he says, don't boast about it or deny the truth. If you're lacking humility, he says, you got to be really careful. Now, couple things about this. First of all, he gives us a word picture. He says, you got to understand, if you lack humility, you are actually letting bitter envy and your pride, your arrogance, your selfish ambition harbor in your hearts. Now, we all understand this because we're here near the lakes, right? You think about a marina and a boat comes up and a boat docks at that marina. This is the picture James is giving us. He's saying, you don't realize this, but when you refuse to embrace humility, you are actually inviting envy and selfishness to dock at the harbor of your heart. You're asking them, you're inviting them just to pull right up. You're allowing them to drop anchor, to tie off, you know, to be right there and just settle in. And you don't pay attention to it. You don't realize it. But if you step back and you begin to think about it, all of us would go, oh, yeah, I actually don't want to give envy a slot at the marina of my heart. I don't want to give selfishness and arrogance a place to dock in my heart. So James says, all right, if that's what's going on with you, listen, don't boast about it. Don't defend it. And it's odd, but this is what some of us do, isn't it? We just like, no, but it's because, and I'm okay because, and we try to justify actions that are clearly not humble. He says, don't do that. That's not wise. Don't deny it either. Don't say, no, that's not a problem for me. He says, you better deal with it. You better deal with it because he says, for where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you'll find disorder in every evil practice. It's just his way of saying, you better deal with it because it is going to have a detrimental impact on your heart. And what's in you is going to come out of you and impact all the people around you, which means it'll impact every relationship you have with all the people that you care about. As I was reading this, I thought about something I heard Jeff Henderson say one day. Jeff said, here's a question you should ask the people around you. He said, ask them, what's it like to be on the other side of me? That is a terrifying question, okay? To have enough courage to say, well, what's it like to be on the other side of me? The reason Jeff asked that question is because Jeff knew we often are blind to the things that are inside of us, that we often are blind to the emotions that have control rattling around in our hearts. And so we think everything's good. And meanwhile, the people all around us are like, no, I feel the chaos. I'm a recipient of the shrapnel, of the stuff that's gotten docked or harbored in your heart. And this was James' point. So with all of that as context, okay, with all of that as context, then James says, now, understanding that, I want to ask you a question about your anger. The question was simply this. What causes fights and quarrels among you? All right, now that you know the relationship between wisdom and humility, you understand that these things get lodged or docked in your heart. Okay. He says, now answer. What causes fights and quarrels? When something happens, it causes you to get angry and to get into it with somebody. What is it that's causing that? To which we would all say, oh, that's cute, James, but you ask it wrong. It's not a what, it's a who. I can point to a who, you know? It's like, they're the ones who cause fights and quarrels, and they're the ones who make me, you know, my mom, she's just always in my business, and I don't know why she feels like she has to tell me what time to get up. She has to tell me I'm parenting wrong and I'm doing this wrong. It's my mom, you know, it's my dad. He's never affirming enough. He's never telling me he's proud of me. He's always wanting more out of me. It's my dad. It's my manager at work. He's always taking crap for my ideas. Makes things so hard. You know, it's the roommate and they won't ever clean up. On and on and on. You know, it's my son. Oh my gosh, my son. You know, it's whatever. We've got all the people we can list because we think it's about a who. And James goes, no. I actually think you're wrong because that's not a wise approach. I actually think you're wrong because when you respond that way, there's no humility in that. You're assuming they bear the full weight of responsibility for the fight or the quarrel or the anger. But it's not all them. Maybe it's partly them, but it's not all them, is it? No, it's partly you too. And humility would see that. Humility would see your part. So he says, I want to suggest a different answer. He says, don't these fights and quarrels come from your desires at battle within you? So he points right back to our hearts, to which again, we're like, no, it's not about me. It's about what they're doing to me right now. He's going, no. Actually, there's something going on inside of you that is causing you to respond with anger, that's causing you to want to engage in a fight or conflict. I don't want to engage. Well, you have a choice, James would say. So if you're engaging, you to some extent at least, want to engage in this fight or this conflict. So he says, can we just get clear on what's actually happening? You're angry. I'm angry because I'm not getting what I want. This was James' perspective on it. Oh yeah, you're angry because you're not getting what you want. You're angry because you just want respect and they will not show you respect. You just want him to show up after work and get home on time every day. You're just not doing it. You just want her to watch how she spends her money. She won't watch. You just want them to give you credit for your ideas. You just want them to give you the freedom to be able to go do it and not micromanage you. You just want your 15-year-old son to keep the room clean. That's all you're asking for, you know? You're angry because you're not getting what you want, to which you go, well, but it's a good thing what I want, and I deserve it or I've earned it. I don't know why that's a problem. James is going, I'm not saying it's a problem. I'm not saying you shouldn't want that. But can we just be clear? The only reason you're getting angry is because they're not doing what you want them to do. Only reason you're having a conflict is because they won't do what you want them to do. Which leaves us going, well, what do I do with that? What do I do with that? Do I just ignore it? Do I just act like, oh, it's not a big deal? No, you can't actually do that. So what do? Well, remember James grew up in the same house with his brother Jesus. And he watched his brother live his life and respond in situations where Jesus was not getting what Jesus wanted. James knew maybe better than most what the Apostle Paul meant when he wrote that Jesus showed up on this earth and he emptied himself. He humbled himself. That he took the form of a servant. Which didn't mean Jesus never got angry. Read the accounts of Jesus' life. He got angry plenty. It was just always good anger. Jesus got infuriated whenever religious leaders would try to make it complicated or difficult for somebody to turn to God. He would be incensed whenever somebody tried to become a barrier, put an obstacle in the way of someone connecting with their Heavenly Father. He was always angry when he saw that. He was always angry at injustice. But ironically enough, even though he was angry whenever somebody else wasn't being treated the way they should be treated, when it came to him, he didn't respond with anger. When it came to him, he experienced the greatest injustice in the world as he's being wrongly accused, falsely accused, ultimately wrongly tried and crucified. And he's hanging on a Roman cross. And one of the guys next to him, one of the criminals next to him, is so angry because he's going through it that he's just spouting off and spewing. And he's gonna be angry to his last breath. But Jesus, hanging there, not getting anything he deserves. You remember what he said? He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Well, why wouldn't you be angry about that? I mean, you're angry when these religious leaders try to make it, you know, impossible for people to follow God. And you're angry when you showed up at the temple. And they had exorbitant prices for all the sacrifices, which meant a lot of people couldn't afford to make them. And I mean, you turn tables over and you just clean those people out. I mean, you were so angry about all that. And then it comes to what's happening to you. And you're not angry. You're like, Father, forgive them. Jesus goes, yeah, because I'm going to embrace humility. When it's an injustice done to someone else, I'm going to stand up for them. When it's about me, I'm going to do the only healthy thing to do. I'm going to forgive. This is the ultimate expression of humility, isn't it? The ultimate expression of humility is my ability when I have been wronged, when I'm not getting what I want, to say, you know what? I'm not going to get angry with them. I'm choosing to forgive them. Forgiveness is the antidote to anger. But when you're able to do that, when you say, okay, I forgive, it frees you from the anger that rattles around inside of you. But this is not easy. This is not simple. And this doesn't mean, by the way, I don't want you to misunderstand, this doesn't mean you shouldn't have boundaries in place. It doesn't mean you don't change the nature of the relationship. It doesn't mean, if you're in an abusive or situation, you get out of it. That doesn't mean any of that. You still take action. But it means instead of responding with anger and holding anger against that person, you just cancel the debt and you forgive. Not because it's best for them, but because it's best for you. Because you don't want anger docked at the harbor of your heart. And so Jesus says, have enough humility to put others before yourself and not to demand your way, but to forgive. So I want to wrap up by asking you what may sound like an odd question, but I think it's an important one. Simply this: what's your relationship with anger? What's your relationship with anger? Is it the boss of you? Is it the boss of you whenever you're just in one particular situation, when you're in one particular environment? Is it the boss of you in one particular relationship? I mean, it doesn't have to show up everywhere. Is the boss of you in that relationship? Is it the boss of you in the sense that, oh my gosh, people at work, they just think you're the nicest person ever, but when you go home, people walk on eggshells because for some reason in that environment, it triggers your anger? Or maybe it's vice versa. What's your relationship with it? Can I remind those of us who are followers of Jesus, if you're not, you get to choose what you want to do with this. For those of us who are followers of Jesus, we have a better boss than anger. We have a better boss than allowing our hatred, our emotion, our temper, our anger, because we didn't get what we want, to drive how we act and interact with people and how we react and the way that we make choices. No, no, we got a better boss than that. He showed up and he emptied himself. He had the right to be angry more than any of us have ever had the right to be angry, but when it came to him, he chose to forgive. So, my encouragement to you, my encouragement to me is this: how about we be angry, but we be angry about the right things? How about we have good anger? How about if we're going to be angry about something, how about we be angry about children who are in at-risk situations? We want to see that improve. How about we be angry about people who in our community who don't have enough to eat? Let's try to solve that. How about we be angry about things like sex trafficking and slavery that's still going on? How about we be angry about the fact that a tenth of the world doesn't have clean water? How about we be angry about the fact that there are thousands of people in our communities who still don't even know there's a Father in heaven who cares for them? How about we be angry about the fact that, man, just as a group, we as churches, we as Christians, we have made it so complicated and difficult for people to connect with God. We've sent the message that God doesn't care about them as much as he cares about us. We're better than them. How about we be angry about all that stuff? But not getting what we want? Maybe we'd be better to forgive. That's what our leader, that's what our boss did. That's what he invites us to do. So, if you've been carrying something around, you got a choice today. Are you going to forgive and let it go? Are you going to keep carrying it? Some of you, you've been carrying stuff around for years. Anger has been docked at the harbor of your heart for so long, you don't even see it anymore. You don't even know it's there. But the people around you do. It's time to deal with it. It's time to cut the lines. Get it out. Maybe something happened this week and you just need to circle back and say, nope, I'm going to forgive. Not going to carry that with me. I can guarantee you at some point this month, at some family gathering, something will happen. It's a certainty, isn't it? Okay, there you go. What if you just immediately chose, don't say it out loud, it'll start a fight. But immediately in your mind, you just went, you know what? I'm not going to get angry over that. I'm just forgiving and moving on. Right there on the spot. You need to circle back and have some conversations. You want a little pro tip? Here's a little pro tip. If you are currently angry with somebody, or you've expressed anger towards someone who is also in this service, the first one to get to the other one and say, I'm sorry, I was just angry because I wasn't getting my way, I'm going to choose humility and forgive you. You win. You win. I'm just kidding. That'll maybe start things worse. But you probably need to have a conversation. You probably both need to go, okay, that was for us. Because we have a better boss. We have a boss who, oh, he was angry. He was angry about all the things you would want your king and your savior and your God to be angry about. But when it came to the injustice he experienced, when it came to him not getting what he wanted, he forgave. So maybe, It's the wisest thing for us to do as well. Maybe wisdom. Maybe wisdom is humility that chooses forgiveness every single time. Let me pray for us. Father, it's easier to talk about than it is to do. But I bet most of us have something that comes to mind, someone that comes to mind. For some of us, our relationship with anger is way too close. It's way too personal. It's way too constant. It's evident by the fights and the quarrels and the conflicts that seem to be in so many different places and relationships in our lives. So would you help us to follow your example, to embrace humility, because that's where wisdom's found. To embrace the humility that will allow us to choose forgiveness. And help us to care about the right things, the important things, to be angry about the good things that really do need to change and where we can really make a difference. Being motivated by the injustices we see in the world to fix them. And it's in your name we pray. Amen. Hey, if you'd like more content like this, subscribe to our YouTube channel and download our Journey app to access all of our recent message content. And our app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend. For more information on our church or to find our app or our YouTube channel, just visit journeycalway.com. That's journeycalway.com. Thanks for listening.